This is Georgia Bulldogs by the numbers. My name is Doug Coward, along with Brent Rollins. We're going to cover the Georgia offense. You know the defense is good, so we're going to cover the Georgia offense in depth, get you some grades there. We'll look at the SEC Championship versus Alabama, and then the college football playoffs and what to expect out of your Georgia Bulldogs. We'll discuss it next on Georgia Bulldogs by the numbers.
Marketing is everywhere, from the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone. We are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
This morning in North Carolina, wheels are spinning. Determination is winning. A passion is now a thriving business, and it shows no signs of slowing down. How? The power of a conversation, like the one Clint Spiegel had with First Horizon Bank about starting a bike wheel manufacturing facility in Asheville. Now it's not just talk, it's rubber meets road. First Horizon Bank, let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Clint. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
This is Georgia Bulldogs by the numbers. My name is Doug Coward, along with Brent Rollins of UGASports.com and Pro Football Focus College. My son, Jacob, and I went to the Georgia-Georgia Tech game, and I mean no disrespect by talking about this. Going to that game, I was obviously cheering for the Bulldogs, as was 99.8% of the building. I could not believe what I saw. It was like 9-1 Georgia fans at Bobby Dodd.
It's amazing. You saw some of the pictures, but you seeing that live, it makes it even more amazing in and of itself. But yeah, if you're Todd Stansberry and you're Georgia Tech's athletic director, that's kind of a not good thing where your building is being taken over by the rival.
The few Georgia Tech fans who were there were all very gracious, very kind. One family even bought us Chick-fil-A.
Hey, there you go.
Literally, they're like, we're going to get some Chick-fil-A. Do y'all want anything? And we're like, no, we're all good. And they brought us back Chick-fil-A anyway. So I'm telling you, they were the kindest people that you've ever met. And I only saw one instance where a Tech fan was leaving and he had had about 30 cold pops. He was wearing a Georgia Tech pullover and an Alabama hat. He had already planned this out. Ooh. As he was leaving, he would get down, point to the Georgia fans, and then just point to his hat, which was the Alabama hat. I'm like, well, wait a minute. That's what you're resorting to?
So you're like pulling for Tech, and then if Tech is in the tank, now you're an Alabama fan.
You already knew Tech was going to be in the tank. I think that's where the wisdom of that attire decision came from.
I just can't imagine that livelihood.
Me either. That's terrible, right? Like, my team's terrible, so I'm pulling against the team that's playing you.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. We won't cover the defense because we've already discussed how great Georgia's defense is. Maybe I'll ask you this question from a grading perspective. With Alabama really struggling with a 6-win Auburn team to play defense and their offensive line didn't look good, Georgia, this looks like a year that Georgia could really absolutely embarrass Alabama.
If you remove the A on the side of the helmet or the Alabama name and the history and the Saban, if you remove all those things and just look at how the two teams have played, Georgia's two touchdowns better.
Yeah, easily.
They just are across the board. However, there are two players in this game, and when we get to that game, there's two players that, if they are the best players on the field, Alabama has a chance.
We'll get to that in a little bit. Let's start with Georgia's offense. The coolest thing that happened on Georgia's offense for me, other than Brock Bowers, good Lord, was the fact that George Pickens came in and had a reception for 5 yards. He didn't score a touchdown necessarily. You wondered, because he had tweeted and posted on Instagram his jersey, so you knew he was there, you knew he traveled, but he didn't come out for the first play of the game, but he did for the second play, which was more of a decoy for James Cook, but it was awesome, and the crowd blew up. Everybody responded to it.
As they should, and it's one of those things where early in the week, or early and even midweek, I thought he was going to play. And I even said it on a podcast, or around the league podcast that we do, talking about the SEC with Coach Don and Dan Young. I said, look, he's going to get 5 to 8 plays. He's going to get at least one target and get ready to roll against Alabama in the SEC championship game. He got six plays. He got one target. He got a reception. He was actually probably the primary target on another play where Stetson got sacked.
Yep.
And Stetson held on the ball a little long because he wanted to get in the ball. That was the perfect deal for him. That was perfect just in terms of what he needed to be able to get off that schneid and, you know, get over that sort of mental hump to go be ready to play against Alabama. Because I felt all along, because here at North Oconee, our local high school, their, you know, wide receiver, defensive back, one of their best players on the team, 8 months post ACL, he was in the game and playing. Once I saw that, and once I saw how good he looked and how good he's played all year, I knew Pickens was going to be ready to play by the SEC championship game.
Some of the other positions, you had Zamir White, you had James Cook that were stellar. But look, Kenny McIntosh and Dijon Edwards wore Dyson folks up too.
The running backs are insane what they have. Like I tweeted out actually earlier today that, you know, the combo is, you know, like the five running backs with, you got White, Cook, Kenny Mack, Kendall Milton, who's only played about half the games, but and then Dejan Edwards, right at about 1,900 yards, 24 touchdowns, over 100 missed tackles forced between the five of them. If you just take, like, if you look at the three primary ones, because Kendall Milton hasn't played as much, if you look at Cook, White, and McIntosh, and you put all their stats together, they're basically Kenneth Walker. And that guy's, you know, being talked about for the Heisman. And so if you put all three of those together, their stats are basically the same as Kenneth Walker's at Michigan State. So, you know, the running game is there. And what was greatest about this game for me was the second drive of the game, the one that ended with the Burton touchdown, where Stetson just kind of flicked it off his back foot,
yep, you
know, perfectly in stride into the hole. But that drive had everything you needed to see to me to be like, okay. And we talked about it all last year, the last couple of years. The offense means more. And now you've got an offense where you look at it, they're number three in the FBS in yards per play. They're number six in scoring. They're number five in passing efficiency. And that's just not, that's more traditional stats, not PFF type stuff. And you think about the scoring, 40.7 points per game. That's a school record ever in 12 games. They're being insanely efficient. And what we saw from Stetson in this game, the ability to take, like he took a check down to Zamir. He took a check down to Cook. You know, wanted to go deep and then hit Kearse Jackson over the middle in that second drive. Like those throws right there, we talked about over the past few weeks. He does those things combined with the big playability. It's very, very good for Georgia fans.
Yeah, but so, and I don't mean to put a yeah, but in there because I don't want to be a yeah, but guy. It was Georgia Tech. I mean, look, he was great. 14 for 20. I get it. Four touchdowns is incredible. But it's 100%. Georgia Tech instead of Alabama.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate for him being Stetson, and unfortunately for Kirby. Until they do it next week, that yell butt's always going to be
there. It's always going to be there. Yeah.
Now, if he goes out and has 19 for 25 for 265 and three scores next week, that yell butt goes
away. It gets wiped away.
And everybody looks at the playoff and is like, bring it on. No matter who comes before us, we are going to take care of business.
Yeah, then you got the wide receivers, the Jermaine Burton, Ladd McConkey, both looked incredible. I was really impressed. I cheer for Ladd because he's from North Murray High School in Chatsworth, Georgia, and I grew up just minutes away over in Dalton, Georgia. So anytime there's a player from that area, I have a soft spot for him. And look, I'll include Jahmyr Gibbs, the running back for Georgia Tech. I have a soft spot for him because he's a Dalton kid.
Yeah, you know, the receiving core, as it's gotten healthy, and now you get Pickens back, and some of the things that they were able to do formation-wise, like when you pick on his six snaps, on three of Pickens' six snaps, they also had three tight ends in the game. They had Fitzpatrick, Bowers, and Darnell in the game. Like Pickens was on the opposite of the field one-on-one on Kenny Mack's 50-yard, almost 50-yard touchdown run. So, you know, you add that element to what they have with the backs, what Stetson's doing distributing the ball, and what we've already said, what they have at tight end. And this is the thing for me. I even thought about this today, and it's to me a legitimate question of college football in 2021. Would you rather have Georgia's three tight ends, or would you rather have Ohio State's three wide receivers?
I got to tell you, I'm taking the tight ends.
I'm leaning that way myself because of what Bowers is as a speed guy. And we saw his speed.
Goodness, did we ever.
Just catch it and torch five Georgia Tech defenders for about 70 yards. But when you have Bowers, Fitzpatrick, and Darnell, especially Darnell and Bowers, that are just matchup nightmares that you can throw to them anytime, you know, catch like crazy. You look at Darnell, he's got guy draped all over him. They throw a high pass to him, catch, easy. Bowers housing a hitch or a little slant or going and getting a jump ball for his second touchdown of the game. Like those three guys, plus what then they add to the running game, like you might almost as an offensive coordinator or off the guy who calls plays, I'd rather have those three tight ends than – Ohio State's three wide receivers.
Now, my son Jacob, who is a Georgia fan through and through, he's eat up with it. If he were cancer, he'd be dead. He makes it tough for me to watch games with him because he gets so spun up about things. And he, why are we doing this? Or why are we doing it? Like, he yells at the TV, Kirby's what? And Stetson, you know, just one of those
so
guys.
So he's a true fan.
He is a true blue through and through. Can't believe it until he sees it. And we'll argue about it no matter how good it is. And say we should have done it a different way to accomplish an even better goal. That kind of thing.
Yep.
He is concerned that Darnell Washington will be in the transfer portal at the end of the season because he's not getting the receptions that maybe a Brock Bowers is.
I don't think so.
I don't either. But I'm telling you, that's he can't be the only one that's thinking that.
No, and you know, it's one of those things where, you know, okay, he goes and then you get, you know, Oscar Delp coming in.
Yeah,
that's you know, supreme talent at the position as well. But I don't think he will be, because I would bet that Darnell is smart enough to see that he is a Gronk type tight end.
Yeah,
a sixth offensive lineman in the running game and a still receiving threat and mismatch in the passing game. And you know, if you're 6'7", you know, 275, 280 like he is. Like, if you want to go catch 50 passes and get hit 50 times on your knees, or no? Or do you want to,
yeah,
or you want to, you know, block a little more and not get your knees taken out all season long? I don't see him being in the transfer portal at all. I think he's too vital to their offense. Now, I will say, you could tell at certain times they make it a point to try to get him the ball.
Yeah.
Yes, they should.
Yeah, they should. Absolutely.
And never forget about him and getting him the ball. But no, I don't think he will end up in the transfer portal, but he is phenomenal as a player. Like on Kenny McIntosh's touchdown run, he ate two guys, like just swallowed up two guys, made Dave Kenny Mack the corner easily, opened up a lane for the touchdown. But his ability to be, like I said, both that sort of – and if he really wanted to be, he could be a first-round pick as a tackle. Like, he's that dominating as a blocker and that athletic. Now, obviously, he'd have to learn to pass block a little better. But, you know, still yet, from an athletic and a talent perspective, he is a first-round talent.
Yeah.
And I think he probably sees that, where he's here one more year and then he's – you know, seeing what the league has to say in terms of wanting his services.
Yeah, well, I think they'll have arms wide open for a guy like Darnell Washington. I mean, he's just mammoth. And when he does go up and make catches, it's just poetry in motion, if you will.
What you have with him and Brock Bowers, like, you have two players who are really unlike anything in college football on the same team. Darnell is a different level of human in terms of size, speed, combo, and ability to catch. Brock, in terms of size, speed, and, you know, athleticism and all that goes with him, like, having those two guys, it allows Todd Monken to just do so many different things, both in the running and the passing game, and makes your offense just enormously more hard to stop because of those two guys.
Yeah, Brock with another 100-yard game, which is huge.
Now third in the FBS in terms of overall tight end grade, number one in the Power Five, number one in touchdowns. The Mackey folks, who did not have him as a finalist, Weidermeyer instead of from A&M as a finalist, bad job.
Yeah, yeah.
Bad job by them.
I mean, what am I missing?
I mean, the freshman part's the only part that even
– That's dumb.
Become close to explain it, but still, yeah, exactly.
That's just dumb.
Dumb.
Show me the guy that's producing. And,
yes,
and
I agree.
And that stuff drives me absolutely insane. Georgia continues to just – outscore people. I hear the chirping a little bit. Who have they played? I have to push back on that a little bit. When they played, many of the teams that they played, they were all top 25 teams.
I hate that argument as well, because so much of that goes into how does that team playing at that moment in time. Like, Arkansas did not feel any better about itself going into that Georgia game.
They certainly did.
They didn't feel it more confident at any point in this season, because right after the Georgia game, they lost three straight. Auburn couldn't have felt any better than what they were going into the Georgia game. Bo Nix was playing as well as he possibly could. Kentucky, they were at their peak prior to the Georgia game. Clemson was now their offense is a lot better now, but you know, their defense was as good as it's going to be that first week because of the guys that they had versus the guys that, you know, they eventually lost over time. You know, those teams all were feeling as good as they possibly could going into that Georgia game. And that's why I don't worry too much about that stuff.
Yeah, third shutout of the year, which is huge. I mean, I know we're not focusing on defense, but that's incredible, man, to shut teams out, including Arkansas, who put up a massive fight against Alabama.
Yeah, I think I saw something along a stat, something about holding teams less than 17 or less for the entirety of this 12-game season, or for 12 games, first time since, like, Texas maybe in 80 or 79. It's beyond insane what the defense is doing. And much much like in 2017 when Chubb and Michelle came back and some of those other, and Carter Bellamy and some of those guys, Jordan Davis and Devontae Wyatt coming back, Zamir White, James Cook coming back. Like, it definitely, from a leadership standpoint, you can tell it's mattered.
Yeah.
That's, you can just 100% tell those guys are leaders.
Is that a trend that you see continuing at Georgia, do you think?
Yes and no. And the no part of that is, like, N'Kobe and Trayvon Walker, I don't see them staying. They're going to be first round picks, or, you know,
right,
early second round.
Right.
So, you know, when you're that talented and you're projected that high in the draft, I think they're going to go. But I think if you're, you know, like, you think about Jordan Davis, he was a maybe in the second round, you know, first round talent, you know, because he's so unique, but maybe a second round type guy. So him coming back, and then all, and to me, the NIL changes everything.
Sure it does.
I think you're going to see a lot of that in college, like, and you're going to see a lot of it in teams where, like a Kentucky, like if they can get Wandale Robinson back and Will Levis and, you know, those guys back, that becomes an entirely different team instead of those guys being in the draft. So I think you're going to see that as a trend
across
nationwide,
football, yeah,
especially because of the NIL.
And one that I got to tell you, I've been in support of the whole time. I do think there are probably some unintended consequences that will come along with it. But overall, I think there's nothing more American than making money off your own name. I'm not in favor 100% of paying players like employees. I think that's ridiculous. I think a college scholarship has value. To pretend it doesn't is silly. You have people doing it all the time. Well, college scholarship means nothing. What? Okay, whatever. I think you're crazy for thinking that. I think a college scholarship does have an incredible amount of value to it. But I do love NIL as well. As a matter of fact, driving down to, and my son Jacob again pointed this out, as we're driving, we're 400 southbound, right there where it joins 85. Headed into downtown Atlanta. Huge law firm. Well, I think it's Morgan & Morgan, and they, you know, they talk about how big their law firm is, whatever. And I'm not trying to give them a plug here or anything. I'm just saying Jordan Davis was on their, you know, their billboard. He gets paid by them for NIL. My son aptly pointed out, we're in the middle of downtown Atlanta, and you got a big Jordan Davis. You're 4 miles from Georgia Tech.
Like Kirby's son, Andrew, had on his sign after the game, Georgia does run this state.
Yeah, yeah. He does, indeed. They do, indeed. This is the Georgia Bulldogs by the Numbers podcast, so let's discuss Alla-dag-gum-bama. I feel like, and I kept saying this, and people were getting mad at me at the watch party after we went to the Georgia-Georgia Tech game. We were watching, hanging out with some friends, and I said, Alabama is struggling with a 6-win team, a team that lost their quarterback, and their backup quarterback is injured in the second quarter.
Yeah, he was on one leg.
Yeah, and you still beat them. In what, 4 overtimes?
Yes. It's, I mean, 4 overtimes even doesn't really have the meaning it used to.
No, it doesn't, because they do the two, whatever.
The 2-point play?
Yeah, it's a bit
like,
silly.
Like their 9-overtime game earlier in the year. But yes, Bama's still there. They're 11-1. It's one of those things where you look across the board. They have two really good receivers, Mechie and Williams. Billingsley, the tight end, is a really good athlete, but they don't use him as much as they could. He's not as big of a game changer as he probably could be. Their running back position is in dire straits right now. I think they have one scholarship running back that's healthy. The Robinson kid, I don't know that he plays in the SEC championship game. Their offensive line outside of Evan Neal is just weak. It's been getting beat on. Bryce Young has been getting pressured all year, but Bryce Young is that good. He's now the highest graded quarterback in college football. He's going to avoid pressure, but the goal of this game is to hit him and hit him as often as you possibly can. And it doesn't have to be a sack. You know, feel it. Hey, a little bit of, you know, you don't want to get the penalty where you land on him, but you want him to feel your presence all game. Like, that was a physical game for him against Auburn. He got beat up again. And here he's got to turn around and do it against an even faster defense and an even more athletic defensive front. Like I said, everything points to Georgia just being a 2-touchdown better team than Alabama. But one, you got to take care of the ball. Like last year against Alabama, Stetson had, what, 3 interceptions?
Yep.
Two, you have to hit Bryce Young. But three, and most importantly, I think, is you have to block Will Anderson. Like, he is a game wrecker playing on another level right now for them. And they are doing a very good job of moving him around. If he's lined up on the edge, he's, you know, stunting around, wrapping around on the inside. Sometimes he's lining up on the interior. I could see them on the first few third downs putting him right over top of Warren Erickson and just trying to, you know, seeing if Georgia will end up with those guys being one-on-one, because that's bad for Georgia. You know, so if you get Will Anderson blocked in the passing game, and I think Georgia can do that with a lot of their RPO game, a lot of their play action game, things like that. I just think there's too much talent on Georgia's offense versus what Alabama has defensively to, you know, I think they're going to wear them down. It's my early feel on this game is very much it's a close game for three quarters and almost like a flip of the Alabama game last year where Georgia's hanging around into the second half and then Bama takes over into the fourth quarter and finishes them off. I feel like that's how this game's going to go from the Georgia being on the right side of it.
Being on the correct side, being on the good side, get that monkey off their back. Yeah, I mean, and you can never discount Nick Saban. I mean, he is the evil genius. Steve Spurrier was the thorn in Georgia's side for many, many years, but it seems like in the last few, it's been Nick Saban. And Georgia and Alabama doesn't have a rich history of playing each other. It's relatively new, but he's the Steve Spurrier, if you will.
He is. And, you know, what's interesting, though, about this team for him is that we always, when we think of Nick Saban, we always think of discipline. You know, they take care of the ball very good defensively, which they have been very good defensively for, you know, in certain areas, but they've been giving up a lot of points. You know, they give up, 35 to Arkansas or something like that, you know, and a lot of points. They almost got beat by Florida and to teams that aren't that good. But the biggest thing, when you look at sort of numbers, one that stands out to me is penalties. Georgia is 16th in the FBS in terms of fewest penalties per game, something, you know, a little less than five. Alabama is 106th in the FBS in terms of penalties the game, almost, you know, 7.5, you know, a little about 7.25 penalties per game. That doesn't scream Nick Saban team to me. You know, that'll be interesting to see because obviously many Georgia fans are probably listening to this and saying, well, we know what's going to happen in the SEC championship game because Alabama's going to.
Simmons was onside.
Onside, exactly. Yeah.
And rightfully
all of that,
so.
All of that comes into play. But I will say this. It's one of the great things for Georgia is you want to beat Alabama. You want to knock them out of the playoff. But if you don't, if something happens that you don't, you're still going to be in the playoff. And I still think they won't set it up as a rematch. Like, for example, if Alabama wins this game, I think this week it'll be Georgia 1, Michigan 2, Alabama 3.
Yeah, Cincy 4.
And Cincinnati 4. And I do think if Alabama beats Georgia, Alabama will be 1. Michigan will still be 2, Georgia 3, Cincy 4. They're going to do it, I think, to where it wouldn't be Alabama, Georgia back to back.
Right. Yeah. You know.
However it worked out. Yeah. Maybe it had Michigan 1, Alabama 2, Cincy 3, Georgia 4. Like, you know, I think it's going to be where Georgia and Alabama don't play back to back, even if they do lose. If Georgia did happen to slip up in this game, I still think, like I said, they're not dropping to 5. They're not taking their consensus number one team and putting them down to 5.
No, that's crazy.
But now with Oklahoma State winning, if Georgia does happen to get beat, Michigan wins, and Oklahoma State wins, because I think Oklahoma State will be 5 this week, could they leave a 13-0 Cincy team out and put Oklahoma State in?
Yes.
As the Big 12 champ, I think that would actually happen.
I think so, too. But, we'll just have to see how it all shakes and bakes out. But I do feel pretty good about the SEC championship. That's from the Georgia fan perspective.
Which, by the way, have you ever felt that way again?
I don't know. In the national championship, I did feel pretty good with 2017 or 2018, whatever year that was.
2017.
Yeah. I felt pretty good. And it wasn't until the very end that you know, they couldn't hang on. And I never believed in Tua. I still don't believe in Tua. Tua's doing exactly what I expected him to do in the NFL, and that's nothing.
Yep. And heard about every third week.
Dude, I took a beating over that. All the time I was getting beat up. You don't know anything. I'm like, all right, I'm just telling you. I don't believe in him.
Well, from Georgia's perspective this year, and one bright side, is in that game in 2018, they beat the snot out of Tua. He was eventually knocked out of that game, and Jalen Hurts came in and saved him.
Yeah.
That's not happening. If Bryce Young goes down, Alabama's done.
So there you go. That's kind of the way it shakes out with the college football playoff, at least in our opinion, and that's the way it shakes out for the SEC championship game.
Meet next week, talk about an SEC championship victory.
I think you're exactly right. Make sure you go and subscribe at ugasports.com. $99 a year or $9.95 a month, but right now there is a special. What is it again? You get it's like
$20? I think it's $20.21 for the first year. New sign up. It's $20.21.
There you go. For a full year of the best Georgia coverage that you can find anywhere, you will be the most informed Georgia fan that exists. I'm telling you, I'm a subscriber. You should be too. It is ugasports.com. And don't forget about the college grades at Pro Football Focus College, and that's about $139 a year. You get all of Brent's work there too. Find him on social media at Brent Rollins, PhD. You can find me at Tug Cowart, at 680 The Fan, at Extra 1063, all kinds of handles. If you're looking for it, at UGA Sports, for that matter, at PFF. There's plenty of them if you want to find the best Georgia coverage. But otherwise, make it a great day. Hope Thanksgiving was well, and it'll be good to catch back up next week after the SEC championship to see how close we were.
Appreciate it. Take it easy.
ThePodcastPark.com is your home for the fans' entire stable of original podcasts. If you're a true Atlanta sports fan, you need to stay connected to shows like Welcome to Madlanta, featuring Atlanta's rich history of sports legends. College football fans will love the Chuck Oliver Show podcast. 2 hours of college football talk every day, all year. And baseball fans get to dive into Domino's archive of baseball legends on Hardball. Subscribe to all these great shows and so many more anywhere you get your podcasts or stream them free 24/7 at thepodcastpark.com. Presented by Associated Credit Union.
Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
This morning in the Atlanta airport, no one's missing a meal on Mac Wilburn's watch. With 11 restaurants to serve passengers, he's got dining for every destination. And it all started when Mac talked with First Horizon Bank about opening a franchise in the airport. Now it's open for business and cleared for takeoff. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Mac. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.